Welcome, everybody, to the Locked On Lakers podcast. I am Anthony Irwin. I'm joined by Pete Zayas. Today's show is brought to you in part by rockauto.com. Head on over to rockauto.com for all your car's needs. Pete, we are inching closer to normalcy here with, not normalcy, but basketball being back.
Sure.
And it was so nice to see, you know, quotes come out from practice and, you know, quotes about, you know, basketball is coming close when Kyle Kuzma is being raved about in practice. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, we're getting
when, that like much 9 closer. For 10 from the field, dominant stretches. It was, yeah.
So nice. Yeah. Give me more. About
practice, give me all of it. Again. Give me all of it. I want to hear like a Caruso 20-12 in a scrimmage leading him and, you know, all of the G League guys to a victory over the first team. Give me all of that, like little juicy practice details that we totally blow up into being way bigger than they actually are. It's just like preseason. It's you can feel basketball coming back. It's nice.
We're right there. Somehow Rajon Rondo was still like stellar in the scrimmages despite not playing. Probably the best
coach on the floor, you know.
So today's show, because we got those quotes, and because the last few times we've done this, we've had quite a bit of fun. I'm here on Silver Screen and Roll. The guys and Sabrina are still killing it, writing up all the quotes and stuff like that. So they gave us plenty of headlines here to talk about. So that's basically what we're going to focus on today. I'm going to go ahead and choose the headlines and what we're going to focus on, things that I find the most interesting. And I'm going to start with this one. This one struck me as the most interesting. Danny Green says the Lakers see the Trailblazers as a bigger threat than the Pelicans or the Grizzlies.
Mm-hmm.
Do you agree? Yeah, disagree?
I do.
Do you see where it's coming from?
They've got the best player of any of those teams, and playoff basketball becomes more and more about your best player versus my best player. And you know, Dame is a killer, man. So he scares me more than any player of the other teams. They're also older, they're veterans, and they understand how the game steps up in the playoffs. And there is obviously a great place for talent and youth, right? Like, but you have to be, I don't think any of the young teams, the OKC, Memphis, I don't think they're at that, like, OKC 2012, like not yet. Maybe they do. Maybe they get there in a year or so. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but they're just like that team that's like, oh crap, they're going to be in a year. Yeah, you know, like I don't think they're at, I could totally see, you know, one of those teams getting to that point in the next year or two, but I just don't think this is that year. But we'll see.
So the first thing I thought when I read the headline and then eventually the quote was, it kind of makes sense that a fellow veteran would consider another veteran-laden team as more dangerous, right? Like, there's just the amount of time that you spend in the league together competing against these guys over the course of your career, the more respect you're going to have for that kind of a team. And so, like, while I'm not disagreeing with what you're saying, I think where my brain went to first was, here's where this quote is coming from. Here's where Danny's head might be at when he's offering up this quote or this bit of analysis. There was also a very interesting report, I believe it was that, you know, because there aren't going to be fans there, this might dip a little bit more consistently into this becoming kind of like pickup basketball, you know, less than it is, you know, organized and strategic and stuff like that, that because of the setting, guys might just sink back into like summer workouts, right? Summer pickup games where the Trailblazers are actually pretty well equipped for that, right? Like this is, that's where Carmelo Anthony would shine. That's where CJ McCollum would shine or Dame Lillard would shine, right? Where
it's an interesting angle.
Yeah. If it really, like, if it basically breaks down into, you know, our five versus your five, you know, first to 15, the Portland scares me quite a bit. If that's the type of setting that we're looking at.
Sure. I mean, that's a good point. It's also like, I could make the same argument for the young teams, right? Like that more freewheeling, a little less strict. Although I don't know if I buy the premise just because of the stakes it's going to be for the NBA playoffs. Like part of the reason why summer ball is the way that it is, the huge reason is because it doesn't really matter, you know?
Yeah.
So,
But Devin Booker's like, oh, wait, that means they aren't going to double me, right?
Yeah, so, you know, that plays a factor for sure. But if that's the case, and if it is more of that wide-open style, like, see, to me, I'd make the opposite argument where, you know what's going to feel really strange is, you know, that feeling, it's been a long time for us Laker fans, but that feeling we're in a playoff game and, like, you're down one and... But that the buzz in the arena, whether it's a road game or a home game, but just that like swell and that tension and all that, the players have to feel that on some level, right? Like I get they've been doing it their whole lives, but a playoff game, a finals game, those things feel different. And I think part of that is the crowd. It's not just because of the stake they're playing for. You can feel the buzz in the arena, all of the eyeballs of not only the 20,000 people there, but half the country watching what's about to happen. Like that pressure's got to get to people on some level, and you're not going to have that in those games. So Dame actually scares me in those situations, right? Mm-hmm. Where I think younger guys have to go through a couple of failures. Dame's like ready to be a killer right now in those types of situations. Yeah. And so I don't know if it's an advantage because he scares me more in ways where I think young guys would fail.
See, but even there, like as you were talking, there aren't going to be fans there. You aren't going to feel that similar swell. Mm-hmm. Like it might be something along those lines. So it might be less for guys to think about. It might be easier for young guys to just say like, you know what? Fuck it. I mean, this isn't.
Oh no, that's what I'm arguing. Okay. That's what I'm arguing though. Right. Like is that's kind of an advantage for those young guys.
Yeah. I misheard you then. Cause I was like, I was thinking that doesn't, I might have missed a little bit. Avery's eating food right outside my closet/office right now. So
no worries. I wasn't arguing. I was kind of I don't entirely buy the premise, but I do think that these are absolutely factors. And so I'm just adding in, you know, some of those different factors as well.
Yeah. Yeah. It's interesting. The reason Portland doesn't particularly scare me is because they have literally nobody on their team who can guard LeBron. Like nobody really does have anybody who can guard LeBron, but they are, you know, significantly poor, like less well equipped to handle LeBron. And you know, while the Lakers, you know, I'd like to see how Caruso handles Dame Lillard. You know, I'd like to see how the Lakers handle pick and roll situations against Portland, right? Are they gonna, because Lillard's a little bit smaller and typically in the playoffs when you really swarm the ball handler with length, Lillard hasn't really done very well with that all that often.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, like he is like the most switchable that type of guy like anyway.
Picture because Caruso
whooped us though, man.
Huh? Yeah. Well Caruso sorry go ahead has Caruso has like what 2 inches on Lillard, I think.
I like how he defends Lillard. There are a couple guys he can't guard, but he's done a nice job on him.
And so if they swarm the ball handler on those pick and rolls, and it's an AD and Caruso double team on Lillard, I have no idea what he's really gonna do there. You know, just in terms of trying to handle that length. Now that does mean if he gets the ball out of that trap, that the Lakers now have to rotate and
kind of scramble, but that's part of what they're good at, right? Acting like that ability to scramble and close out hard and swarm. And that's when the Lakers were at their best, is very fast rotations where teams would have to make one extra pass than they would have to make against most other rotations. Mm-hmm. And at that point, you've got AD recovering, Dwight recovering, JaVale recovering, Caruso. Even LeBron, like big rangy guys where like CJ McCollum's going to have to float that shit way high up in the air. You know what I mean? And so just those little things make a difference. I would also say though, I don't know if either of the other teams have guys that could defend LeBron. Like LeBron did some bad things to the Pelicans this year, man. And like, look up his numbers against the Pelicans.
LeBron took it upon himself to really take it to the Pelicans too. Like if there's a team out there that can say we saw like kind of playoff LeBron, it's probably New Orleans, right?
That's a good point. Yeah. I think that if they were to end up matched up in the first round, I think that, that mentality would help. I think there'd be a great appeal to LeBron and AD and all those guys to make a statement. This is me speculating, of course, but I think that you're exactly right. Those were statement games.
Yeah, those are, I mean, it's informed speculation because everybody watching those games could see it.
Hey, man, you know, they're coming after your boy, right? Like the way they kind of treated AD on the way out. You know,
that was me.
I'd be like, all right, I'm going to.
I thoroughly enjoyed it. It was incredible.
See what happens.
Like Zion's getting every other headline and every other national, like,
game. And every other free throw. My God.
He got like 20 free throws. He's next. It's like LeBron's like, fools, I'm here. I'm here and this city, like, disrespected my guy. Like, of course LeBron took a little extra. Yeah.
I love it.
Those games are incredible. Those are great.
Yeah.
Let's handle one quick one here before we throw to the first break. So, actually, you know what? This is a topic that's longer than just a quick end of segment thing. So, let's take a quick second. When we come back, actually, no, I found a better one. This is a little bit of fun to send us into the break. Stephen A. Smith and Danny Green talk about sex in the bubble. Did you see that?
Oh. No, I didn't.
that's basically all I wanted. That's I just wanted to see your face when I
just
said
my that. Disappointment. Just disgusting. Just
like, come on, Anthony.
God all damn right. it.
Let's take a quick second and we come back. We won't talk about Stephen A. Smith's sex life. Today's show is brought to you in part by rockauto.com. Rockauto.com has the best selection you're going to find in any online catalog of car parts. They are going to always present you with the best prices no matter what background you are using their site for. And most importantly, it's reliable. It's, you know, you never have to feel like, I know sometimes I just bought a pair of sunglasses the other day. They said they swore they were the certain brand. They show up and they very clearly weren't that brand. And, you know, and that's just kind of the risk that you take when you buy stuff online. But with rockauto.com, they are always going to have you covered no matter what it is that you need for your car. And you know you're going to get the best price. You know you're going to find the right part on there. And you know when it shows up, you don't have to worry in those days because it's your car, right? Like, I can get by without a pair of sunglasses. I can't really get by without my car. Or a lot of people out there can't get by in the same way with their car. So again, that's rockauto.com. They have everything that you could possibly need for whatever car it is that you're currently driving. They have an immense amount of information about those parts, you know, depending on what it is that you are hoping to get out of it. So check them out, rockauto.com, and then write "Locked On" in there, "How did you hear about us" box, so that they know we sent you. That's rockauto.com. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. rockauto.com. So the next topic here, and actually it was what I was going to start the show off of, but the report came out that of the players that tested, of the 346 players and team personnel that were tested, zero COVID tests came back.
Yeah, man.
Shouts to the bubble.
So far, I mean, this is one of those things where if you're superstitious at all, it's like when you're driving somewhere and you're like, huh, we haven't hit any traffic yet, you know? And then of course, you know, 5 minutes later, you're looking at the person saying that, like, why'd you do that? You know? And
yeah.
Well, so
go ahead.
That's basically the situation with this, right? Is like, you can see the protocol that they have in place, right? And we see enough videos from the players from the bubble to just, and it's great. You kind of get this small feel for what the rooms are like, what it's like to be there. Mm-hmm. And in the players aren't like, of course the league's going to try to emphasize, look at how good we're doing on all of the, you know, protective measures, but the players don't have any reason to, you know, BS about that. Right. Mm-hmm. They're just walking around and you see all of the protocols in place, or a lot of them at the very least, for what, you know, what they have to go through to stay safe. And then of course there's a great likelihood that somebody does have a positive case at some point. And that's what remains to be seen, is like, what are the protocols after that? What does it look like if somebody does come down with that? But so far, I think those results speak to what we're seeing on video.
And also the planning that went in ahead of time with the bubble, right? Like, this is the thing.
NFL versus NBA, man.
Yeah, man. I was marveling at this the other day that, like, the NBA, and, you know, I think in some ways they opened themselves up to some criticism, but I think in some ways the criticism that they received was because of the transparency they were showing in the process in which they were trying to put together some kind of protocol to keep everybody safe. And then you look at the NFL and it's just like, wait, there's a pandemic going on right now? Wait, yeah. What? Like, where have, you know, and, you know, you had players as teams were getting ready in the NFL to open up training camps. You have players saying like, hey guys, what are we doing here?
They had the luxury of time too, right? Yeah. Like, it cut off, had pitchers and catchers reported for MLB by that point?
I don't even think they reported earlier than normal.
It was close. Like March. It was, so we stopped in early to mid March, right?
Oh, okay. And so I see your, I understand your question. Yes. Pitchers and catchers had reported.
Basically, I'm sorry. Out. Baseball had started on at some level that new season had started. The NBA was, you know, 2/3 of the way through.
Yeah.
And maybe a little bit more. And
hockey, same thing as that.
Hockey, the NBA. Same type of thing. So, all of those sports had to come up with like a, oh shit, we got to figure this out now.
Yeah.
Right. In order for our season to even have a chance to come back. It's staggering to me that the NFL, they were the ones that had the greatest luxury of time of anybody.
Mm-hmm.
Right. They had several months before any of their real shit started going.
Yeah.
And still, like, they're at a place where they don't know what's going on. That's, yeah.
It's insane to me. I mean, it's not that crazy to me when you consider kind of the politics behind the NFL, right? Mm-hmm. And especially the owners behind the NFL. And I would say that they're more likely to question science than maybe other leagues might be, or players might be. You also have a group of players or a league of players in the NBA that would have a lot more vocally questioned whether or not this was safe early on, right? And they were very vocal at every step along the way here about not only is this, you know, are we going to make sure that we're safe, but are we also going to maintain any kind of freedom for ourselves? Like, how are we going to, you know, that conversation between the players and the owners and with the commissioner was public, but it was also productive. It was like, you saw yesterday, you saw players up and down the NFL like, yo, Raj, what are we doing? You know, and there was never that moment there with it really speaks to how much better at his job Adam Silver is than Roger Goodell. Like, Goodell at every step along the way has been a babbling buffoon. So, like, it doesn't really shock me that he has found yet another thing to screw up on. But it's just insane to me to watch, you know, after, and you and I paid a lot more close attention, obviously, to the NBA than to the NFL, but, you know, still watching how that was going and the lack of headlines about, you know, the NFL is going to plan for this kind of, you know, start a training camp and this is what they're going to do for testing. And you know, there was still a conversation the other day about teams are asking cities to allow fans to sign a waiver to go to games, right? As if as if it's just those fans who were put at risk by going to those games. Right.
That's the common thread in the anti-mask and anti-social distancing. It's the presumption that you're the only person that's being jeopardized in the situation.
Right. Yeah, there's like this, you know, and obviously the fans that want to go to those games are going to sign that waiver. People are still going to line up to go to those games because we live in a stupid country. But like at the end of the day, I you know, this is where I got to applaud the NBA for the process that they're having. And then you look at the NFL and you say, all you had to do, and it's kind of the conversation we had the other day about America's handling of COVID compared to other countries around the world, right? Like, all we had to do was watch some of those countries handle this elsewhere, right? And take notes and learn from what some of the things that they did that made those countries successful, and then apply some of that here in the States. And the NFL, all they had to do was like, all right, watch what the NBA, especially on a day like today where there were no COVID tests inside the bubble, right? Like, all the NFL had to do was like, watch, hey, here's what the NBA did, and here's what's made them successful to this point, and now we can apply some of that to our league. And instead, they were just like, there's no pandemic. There's nothing going on. We're just going to keep that money train rolling, no matter who it might put at risk, whether it's players, coaches, and eventually fans. Let's just keep this money train rolling. It's wild to me. It was crazy to watch that go down. Let's do one more quick headline here, unless you want to actually talk about Stephen A. Smith and Danny Green. You want to? No? No?
I'm shaking my head silently as to not give you the audio. That's what I'm going to do when I'm really upset from now on, is I'm just going to shake my head so you can see me.
People can actually...
They can't hear me.
I think they can pick
up. I feel like you're mining me for reactions, Anthony. I don't like it.
It was my favorite thing to do with Harrison, and it's becoming my favorite thing to do with you. It's just...
Yeah, that's great. You
know, we've reached that stage of this host and co-host relationship. Let's go to break before Pete punches me through my computer. All right, so the next headline here, we made fun of it at the top of the show, but Frank Vogel says Kyle Kuzma has, quote, dominated the floor, end quote, during Lakers scrimmages. Pete?
Like I said, man, give me more of that stuff. I love that these are the...
9 of 10.
Who's gained 15 pounds of muscle? Have we gone this long without anyone gaining 15 pounds of muscle?
I
Sources tell me that's, yeah, maybe not accurate.
As in like other animals' muscle. Like, yeah. So
yeah, I'm a little disappointed we don't have a 15 pounds of muscle. But yes, that's, man, give me all of it.
Actually, no, we did. We got it. Remember, there was the pictures of Rajon Rondo looking absolutely
young. Oh yeah, looking all jacked, yeah.
Yeah. And then the boxing video and all that stuff. If there's one thing that you don't want to do well with your hand history, probably not boxing. I would probably avoid that. But Frank Vogel says Kyle Kuzma has dominated the floor during Lakers scrimmages. I kind of want to dig a little bit on this one. Okay. Because like we talked earlier about setting, right? And how there's a possibility that because of the way these games are going to be played or where they're going to be played or the setting, the general setting of how these games might go down, some guys might actually play a little bit better because it might dip back into pickup stuff. Scrimmages, like Kyle Kuzma is a pickup player, right? Like just bucket getter.
Like that free and open style basketball, not that like grimy physical, like, cause there are different styles of basketball and they can work, right? Different, but he's of that more that free and open and relaxed type of style. Yeah.
Yeah. I think he went 9 of 10 and dominated or whatever? Like, no, I don't see that. But does he show out better in that setting maybe than in like a typical NBA game or, you know, let alone a playoff game eventually? Yeah, I could buy that. I could really buy that.
Man, maybe it's all of the time off, and maybe it is a change of employment making me more, you know, positive in seeing things. But damn it, I'm an optimist. Kyle Kuz added some toughness to his game this year.
Mm-hmm.
Like he was enormously frustrating on offense for much of the season.
Yeah.
But he got a lot better on defense. And he was a guy where, like, at the beginning of the season, I would argue with friends, with like my close friend basketball friends, where I could say my real opinion. And I'm like, man, I don't know. I don't think he's gonna get there on defense by the time we need him to be by the playoffs. That's what I honestly felt, right? I was hoping, of course. And he had grown so much on that end to the point where he, in some of our games, like remember when Tatum was roasting us in that game and Kuz helped, like we went to a bit of a zone, right? But Kuz put length on the ball and had lateral quickness in a way that bothered Tatum in a way that our other perimeter wing defenders could not. And our wing defense had been such a gaping hole in the team for all season that if Kuz becoming a wing guy, right? So like, defensively, that's his role. That's his value. He's got a narrow window, but that's part of coaching. That's part of playoff basketball is instead of playing more generalized style, it's a, we need you to be this because this is what we need against this team. Sometimes that's going to be wing defense. If we play the Clippers at any point, it's definitely going to be wing defense.
Mm-hmm.
So Kuz's ability to score, I think, is more translatable to the playoffs than most players are.
Yeah.
Because he hits those weird shots, right? Like that,
like in betweeners and
yeah, those floaters, that like runner off of your right foot with your right hand while your mm-hmm. left leg's kicking out. Like it's those shots that you've got to take when you're attacking a closeout against a defense that's rotated properly, and that's the shot that's available, right? So that's where the mid-range game becomes really important, is in those floaters and mid-range shots when the defense does its job, and you still got to take shot, you still got to hopefully score on it. And so I think Kuz has some combustibility too. He played some of his best offensive games in some of our biggest games. He had a great game against the Clippers, against Boston. He was great on both ends of the floor. I think he had 24 points.
This is a good point. I like where you're going here.
So he's got like, I'm telling you, like I get why he drives people crazy, but he's got something. I don't know if he's going to get there in time. Maybe I'm just making it up, but that kid's got like high level playoff basketball, can give you 20 in a game three when you really, really need it while defending some guys on the wing. Like he's going to continue to drive us crazy, but there's something there, man.
The way I kind of look at it with Kuzma, I think on a day-to-day basis or a night-by-night basis over the course of an NBA season, he's going to drive people insane.
Mm-hmm.
Especially if like, you know, LeBron's kind of focus isn't right on Kuzma, or, you know, AD's or Dwight's, like, you know, focus in talking people through rotations isn't on Kuzma. I could kind of see Kuzma floating a little bit, but then as soon as, you know, somebody makes a comment to Kuzma and just reminds him like, hey bro, we need this one. You know, mm-hmm. hey, you know, this is a big one for us. We need you to show out here, at least in this way. I think that's when Kuzma probably takes that step forward, where his attention will kind of float elsewhere over the course of a season. But in like in a moment where you really need him and you mm-hmm. and you can get him to snap back into focus, I think that's when you're going to see the best Kuzma.
I think that's a great point. And not everybody reacts that way, right?
Yeah.
Like a lot of people do better when they can kind of float through and do, you know, but when somebody says, hey, we need you, that gives some obligation. That's pressure, right?
Yeah.
And some people don't respond to that well. I think you're exactly right. I think Kuz, when, you know, especially when it's somebody like LeBron and these guys that he, you know, at his age, he looked up to, right? Like that's,
yeah.
Somebody he grew up with telling him, we need you. The sense of obligation, I think, and duty to step up becomes strong. And I think that's, like you said, man, that's the best version of Kuz. I think it's in him.
Yep. All right. Last one here. LeBron James thinks he's made his case for MVP. The question was essentially about the MVP, you know, race essentially being ended abruptly when COVID struck and the season went on hiatus. Now, teams have 8 games basically to, you know, either finalize that conversation or maybe try to sway some people out of where their votes are currently at. And LeBron basically said, you know, he's done everything he can. He's answered questions about conferences that he's heard over the last 15 years. My question to you is 2 things. One, how scared would you be if you saw Graybeard LeBron? Because like old man strength, LeBron's already like a little terrifying to me anyway, but then you see old man strength added on top of that stuff, mm-hmm. That would make me kind of nervous.
It definitely adds to the intimidation factor, right? Like this is a guy who's like, I've been fucking people up for your entire life, right? Yeah. Like I've been doing this for years and now it's your turn, right? Like it'd be intimidating.
I remember when Kimbo Slice, like when he was fighting people and it was going viral just on YouTube right before he made his way to you know, the MMA stage, and you saw those clips and like that guy would scare me more than just about anybody. He's got that like male pattern balding going on. He's got the gray in his beard. You see like the wrinkles on top of his head. He's like, I don't want to, that guy's already intimidating in and of himself, but then you add old man strength to it. And it's just God strength at that point. There's nothing you could really do. But about the actual question though, or about this actual topic, do you think that conversation is over now? Do you think there's anything LeBron can do to sway, Giannis voters? Do you think it's just out, you know, Giannis won it? Like, do you think LeBron won it? Where do you sit on this MVP discussion?
Honestly, man, like, we put way too much stock into awards when we're talking about all-time greatness. It's almost like I wish we could throw all of them out, because a lot of them, like, man, how many MVPs did Shaq win?
One.
Do you remember how dominant Shaquille O'Neal was?
Yeah. Kobe has one. Kobe and Shaq combined for as many MVPs as Steve Nash.
That tells you right there, like, how much we should give a shit about this in the first place. I'll answer the question, forgive me, but just like the, I don't want to say things I regret.
I wish we were better at it. Like, given how much weight we put into awards, I wish we were better at voting for said awards. Or doing the math on those awards, because you and I have never voted for this stuff, but the people responsible for doing the voting here has screwed it up so fervently. Like, Greg Popovich, I think, only has like one Coach of the Year award. Phil Jackson only has one Coach of the Year award. You know, and Steph Curry, which, like, by, you know, I'm not a Steph Curry hater. I do enjoy making jokes about him disappearing in the playoffs. Like, that's one of my favorite things to do, because some of my friends are Warriors fans. Hi, Aaron. But do I think he should be the only unanimous MVP winner in the history of the game? Fuck no. Hell no.
Right.
No way. It makes no sense whatsoever. Not in a league that had Michael Jordan at one point, Magic Johnson at one point, Shaquille O'Neal, LeBron James, Kobe Bryant. The one unanimous winner is Steph? That makes no sense to me.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, and that's no disrespect to Steph. That was an all-time great season that he had there, right? Like, so Steph deserved a unanimous MVP. Just so did a lot of other people in different seasons. Like, come on, guys, what are we doing?
Yeah. Right.
So I think the MVP is LeBron, and my argument is that he had a more difficult job than Giannis did. And that's partially based on a lot of the work about what Milwaukee is, and a lot of the great things about what the Milwaukee Bucks are. It's work that's been done in previous seasons.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
They are a well-run machine. Budenholzer does a great job. And that team, like, they're really freaking good. But a lot of that work, they're in year, three or four of this, and they've had a lot of continuity, a lot of the same guys back, right? Guys know how to play with each other. Giannis knows, hey, Middleton likes the ball here. When he's drifting this way, that's when I want to hit him, right? Like, all those little things that come with just familiarity when you play with somebody a lot. Giannis is a monster. So this is no disrespect to Giannis, but I don't think people put proper context to what LeBron did specifically this season with this team, how cohesive they were on the court, off of the court, how well the pieces fit together. LeBron is the orchestrator of what we do, right? He's the guy who puts it all together, right? That's not to diminish Anthony Davis's incredible talent, right? But just from a moving the chess pieces, LeBron is the guy who moves the chess pieces. Right. And this worked, like, in terms of what this team was versus what our expectation of this team was, could we have hoped for a better season aside from the stoppage, right? But from a basketball sense, could we have hoped for a better season than what we had up to that point?
I mean, I would have preferred to win a few more games against the Clippers, or, you know, the team's elite, or the league's elite teams or whatever. But, like,
It's like a 9.5 out of 10 in type of enjoyable season.
Even there, like, the Lakers did end the season technically by whomping on both those teams.
Right. They were kind of close, but not really games. Like, we whooped them. Both of those teams.
By elite team versus elite team game standards, that was the Lakers beating the hell out of those teams.
This was an extraordinarily fun season, right? Yeah. And it was fun because we, after 7 years of not winning, like, this team worked out, like, everything worked out, man. Like, in terms of, let's hope, like, Dwight and just all of the things that could have gone wrong, KCP, like, comes up and, like, yo, man, remember how we talked about KCP?
Yeah.
right?
Yeah.
It's a damn miracle that we talk about him now, like the, oh man, KCP, man, like the third best player on the team. You know, like he's, we're all excited when he comes into the game.
You remember how I'm excited when the ball rotates over and it's KCP and he's standing over there open. It right. used to be like, ah, man, can't that be somebody else?
So that's, which isn't to say that LeBron deserves even a lot of credit for KCP. KCP mm-hmm. deserves credit yeah. for, like, especially keeping his head together, because we can be harsh on
right. No,
this can be a difficult place to play, I'm sure, when the fans do not like you.
No and way.
Props to him for being mentally strong enough to be like, even if he was like, man, screw you guys. I'm just gonna do this to spite you, right? But who knows? But props to him for keeping it together. Mm-hmm. But in terms of all of the ingredients fitting together and mixing together properly, that's LeBron, man. And this was a masterful season from one of the game's all-time greats. And I think a lot of times we don't do enough to appreciate greatness as it's happening. We're so used to like picking it apart or comparing to something else, right? Mm-hmm. Like now, Giannis just had an all-time great season as well. That happens every few years, or even, you know, maybe even a couple of times a year where two guys do something that's like, wow, man, like you remember like those types of seasons you talk about 20, 25 years later, like 94 Olajuwon. Like,
yeah.
There were a lot of great Olajuwons, but like 94 Olajuwon was like, whew, you know, and yeah. 2000 Shaq, right? Mm-hmm. Kobe's one of those guys that has a couple of years that you can say like that, but like the 06 Kobe where he was averaging 35 a night, right? Like those types of seasons, both Giannis and LeBron have had those types of seasons. I would just argue that LeBron had to put together a 5,000 piece jigsaw puzzle, and Giannis has had to put a much smaller one together. And most of it was done before the beginning of this season.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of Giannis's improvement this year kind of felt like natural progression, right? Both of him and the situation around him, and because of the situation around him, nobody saw this coming from LeBron. Nobody. Like, you know, maybe, I remember before the season started, it was like, you know, I hope we get a haymaker from LeBron. I hope we see, mm-hmm. I'm interested to see if we get it, what it looks like. We got one and it looks mm-hmm. pretty damn incredible. And like, you know, the thing that I think the one opinion here that is objectively wrong is saying that it's LeBron and nobody's close, or it's Giannis and nobody's close. These two guys had incredible seasons. And if you're going to make the case for Giannis, fine. I'll make the case for LeBron. And I think you got to, like, I think both sides of this equation got to be able to say, yeah, the other guy's really effing good too.
So the Lakers are never going to get any credit, right? Like there's, and I don't think the people who dislike the Lakers are always honest with themselves about the fact that they don't dislike them. They view them as, you know, fair arbiters of what's going on, but the disdain is palpable, right?
Yeah.
And so I don't think Vogel's going to get a coach of the year. Like going to be very high up in coach of the year. I don't think LeBron's going to win MVP. I don't think AD is going to win defensive player of the year. Mm-hmm. I think probably two out of those three should. And
yeah.
I don't think Rob Pelinka is going to get any credit for, you know, this is a guy we were trashing, man. Like this season went so damn well. Like, is it so wrong to, you know what I mean? Like acknowledge that we're always, you know, fighting off against someone talking shit, right? But like, this was an all-time great season from a guy who has a very strong case as the best to ever do it. Those are special. They don't come along very often. If you want to vote for Giannis and you think that he's the MVP, like, you're not going to get too big of an argument out of me. But like, this was an all-time great season from LeBron. He put on an absolute clinic.
Yeah. I agree completely. All right, that's going to do it for this episode of the Locked On Lakers podcast. Next time Pete and I talk, we're going to be looking ahead to the first scrimmages from around the NBA on Wednesday. And then the next time after that, the Pete and I talk is going to be analyzing a Lakers scrimmage. So
Hey. How
about that? We're just about there. Just about there. Dwight, put on your damn mask. Stop it. Stop saying a bunch of stupid stuff. And let's actually get to those scrimmages. And let's get through this bubble all together and as safely as possible. That goes for everybody out there too. Wear your mask. Just like be smart, be safe, care about other people, wear your mask. That's going to do it though. Have a great rest of your day. Make somebody else's. Check out rockauto.com. Listen to Avery scream at me in the background. It's time for her bedtime. We'll talk to you tomorrow.